The future of abortion rights took center stage at the U.S. Supreme Court. The justices heard arguments this morning over a Mississippi law that bans abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. And outside the court building, recognizing one of the most consequential cases about the issue in decades, dozens of protesters on both sides gathered en masse. To break down the arguments and the potential fallout, we turn to Marcia Coyle, chief Washington correspondent for the National Law Journal. She was in the courtroom today for the oral arguments. And Mary Ziegler, a Florida State University law professor and author of the book Abortion and the Law in America. And welcome back to the program.
Thanks,
hello,
Judy.
To both of you. Marcia, before we get into the specifics of today, remind us what the justices are being asked to decide here.
All right. The state of Mississippi in 2018 enacted a ban on abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Lower courts struck it down. Mississippi came to the U.S. Supreme Court asking, are all prohibitions on pre-viability abortions unconstitutional, as Roe and Casey have said they are? And it then also asked the court to overturn Roe and Casey, the court's landmark abortion rights rulings.
So it grew from an original question.
It did.
To a much bigger one. And Mary Ziegler, we can't always tell from what the justices are saying what might happen in a case, but what did you hear today from these justices?
Well, going into this case, I expected the focus of the argument to be on viability. And while I was convinced that the court would eventually overrule Roe, I wasn't convinced that they would do so in this case. I thought they might eliminate viability as the line at which states could criminalize abortion and then maybe work their way up to overruling Roe in a later case. What I heard today was that many of the justices seemed potentially ready to overturn Roe now. Amy Coney Barrett asked questions suggesting that women didn't need access to abortion. They could simply put children up for adoption. I don't think these are questions you ask if you're not seriously considering reversing Roe, which is what I fully expect the court to do, and more likely sooner than that.
Well, let's talk about some of the specifics of what we heard today. Marcia, I think it was clear in the first few minutes of these oral arguments that this case it was one of great consequence. And and we heard Justice Breyer raise the critical question of overturning precedent, stare decisis. He spoke in reference to the 1992 abortion decision, Casey, which you just mentioned. We have an audio recording of that. He makes a comment, and then you hear from the Mississippi State Solicitor General Scott Stewart.
What the court said follows from that is that it should be more unwilling to overrule a prior case. Far more unwilling we should be, whether that case is right or wrong, than the ordinary case. It is particularly important to show what we do in overturning a case is grounded in principle and not social pressure, not political pressure.
I would not say it was the people that called this court to end the controversy. The people, many people vocally really just wanted to have the matter returned to them so that they could decide it locally.
And Marcia, I want to now have everyone hear another comment on precedent, this from the conservative Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
I want to ask a question about stare decisis and to think about how to approach that here. If we think that the prior precedents are seriously wrong, if that, why then doesn't the history of this court's practice with respect to those cases tell us that the right answer is actually to return to the position of neutrality?
So, Marcia, precedent is everything.
And it absolutely is. And Justice Breyer was quite passionate in reading the section of Casey on stare decisis, which, as you know, is the Latin phrase meaning to stand by the thing. In the context of law, stand by the prior decision. And he said, that Casey went through step by step by step all of the factors that the court applies when trying to decide whether to overrule a case. And in Casey, they were looking at overruling Roe. And the court came to the conclusion, no, that these factors did not justify overruling Roe. So Justice Breyer was saying, you know, what has changed here? Nothing. And if we do this without being principled and with reason, the court's legitimacy is going to be at stake. On the other hand, Justice Kavanaugh is saying, well, if it's egregiously wrong, why don't we go back to what our prior practice was, which is to be neutral? But the other lawyers for the clinic, the abortion clinic, they made it clear that the court has never really said that a precedent being egregiously wrong was enough to overrule it. In fact, Chief Justice Roberts has even said that.
And we know, in addition to precedent, there was one consideration that came up a number of times this morning, and that was the viability of the fetus in a pregnant woman. The conservative justices, Mary, and I'm going to come to you after we listen to this, question the so-called viability standard. Here's an excerpt from the Chief Justice, John Roberts, followed by a later comment by U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar, who was arguing against the Mississippi law. Let's listen to this.
If you think that the issue is one of choice, that women should have a choice to terminate their pregnancy, that supposes that there is a point at which they've had the fair choice, opportunity to choice. And why would 15 weeks be an inappropriate line? So viability, it seems to me, doesn't have anything to do with choice. But if it really is an issue about choice, why is 15 weeks not enough time?
The question is, why would women need access to abortion after 15 weeks, and what is the effect on them? And there are any number of women who cannot get an abortion earlier. They don't realize that they're pregnant. That's especially true of women who are young or don't haven't experienced a pregnancy before, or their life circumstances change, they lose their job, or their relationship breaks apart, or they have medical complications. Or for many women, they don't have the resources to pay for it earlier.
And Mary, we were saying earlier that the Chief Justice seems to be searching for a middle ground here.
Right. I think that going into this, and I mean, it's a stretch to call it a middle ground, because to get rid of viability as the dividing line would be to reverse a core dimension of Roe v. Wade that's been there since 1973. But that seemed to be the solution that Chief Justice John Roberts was interested in. And he returned to this question of viability several times, suggesting essentially that if there's a right to choose abortion, does it really have to go until 24 weeks? Why couldn't it be, for example, 12 weeks or 15 weeks when most abortions take place relatively early in pregnancy? That wasn't surprising in and of itself. I think what was more surprising was that more of the justices didn't seem interested in that question.
The one other thing I definitely want to get the both of you to comment on is to the extent politics is the undercurrent here. That was brought up very early in the oral arguments today by Justice Sotomayor, and here is just a part of what she said.
Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts?
Marcia, she had flat out said that these cases were brought because the court now has three new conservative justices.
She did point to the fact that the Mississippi legislators who enacted this law said they were doing this because there were new justices on the court. She also picked up on what Justice Breyer had said earlier when he was reading from the Casey decision. And the Casey decision was very clear that the court had to be concerned about its legitimacy when it comes to overturning precedents without justification, that it cannot bow to public pressure. It cannot be because there are new justices on the court. So she picked up on that and basically ran with it.
And Mary, reminding us that if the court does make the kinds of changes that both you and Marcia say could come from this decision, it will have a profound effect on women across the country.
It will. I mean, it will have the most obvious effect on women in the South and Midwest, where we would expect to see not just entire states criminalizing abortion, but functionally entire regions, which will make it much harder for people who don't have a lot of money to travel to get an abortion, because that would require either getting an illegal abortion medication and hoping nothing happens to you, or getting on a plane, which, of course, is not possible for people with limited resources in some instances. It's going to have effects, I think, on people in other states as well. For example, blue states like California are already expecting to see a surge in abortion patients because people in places where abortion will be illegal will be seeking those services elsewhere.
Well, it goes without
saying.
Judy,
can I say one other thing? Yes. Although I came out of the arguments feeling that the a woman's right to an abortion was in serious trouble here, I covered Casey in 1992, and I remember at that time many of us also thought that Roe was doomed after those arguments and that Justice Anthony Kennedy was going to be the deciding vote. But you never know what's going to happen from the time of the arguments until the justices sit down, vote, and actually start drafting opinions.
And we needed to hear that reminder that we don't know until
we don't know.
The decision right. comes out. Marcia Coyle, Mary Ziegler, thank you both. We appreciate it.
Pleasure, Judy.
Thanks for having us.